Hello and welcome to the Sonic Cinema Podcast. My name is Brian Scuttle. Thank you for joining me at www.sonic-cinema.com, as well as the Sonic Cinema Podcast YouTube channel. Click subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, or the YouTube channel. Just thank you very much wherever you listen, and I appreciate you sticking with us for the past few months. You can also check us out at patreon.com/sonicsema. There you will find quick takes, short film block reviews, which I am getting to for today's subject, and more, as well as Leaving the Collection and Life soundtrack, which I do promise to continue at some point here. And that is at patreon.com/sonicsema. So, before I get to the subject of today's episode, I kind of have to explain why we haven't had an episode in the past couple months. The fact of the matter is, I've been extremely busy. Between work, between dealing with things regarding my mother's passing, with and as well as stuff we've got going on around the house. We basically had to get the roof redone, we had to get flooring done, and much more. I just haven't really had time to sit down and do this episode, or do any episode. I've barely even had time to watch a lot of movies. And so, it's one of those things where I just haven't had time. And I really, you know, it is what it is. It's life. But I appreciate everybody who understood, who's stuck with me, and who is ready to get the podcast back on track. I really do appreciate it. And appreciate your patience during this time. And it's also was not helped by the fact that my desktop computer, basically in the middle of all this moving, decided to die on me. Gave me the blue screen of death. So I am still, I still don't have a new desktop computer, but I'm doing this on my laptop, which will work fine. And thankfully, I've got enough, I had enough stuff backed up to where I could transport over here for recording today's episode to where I was able to get it done. So that's where we are. So after almost 2 months after the festival ended, we are finally wrapping up my coverage of the 2025 Atlanta Film Festival. And normally I like to have this done by May, but, you know, it is what it is. It's how everything happened. And this episode, as you know, tends to be dealing with, you know, what stood out among the festival, what I enjoyed most during the festival, and of course any interviews that happened during the way. Now, the good news is you guys are going to have plenty of interviews. I have six interview sessions, if you will, with filmmakers, one of which went for a long time, and normally will have been one that I did individually, and I probably should have, but the fact of the matter is, it just made sense to keep it as part of this block at a certain point. And, you know, two, and most of these are from Red Carpet red carpets they did, but one of these is one where I talked to the filmmaker prior to the festival, and we had agreed to try to meet up during the festival, and ended up being such a wonderful conversation and discussion between us that they're gonna be back on the podcast before you know it. And I'm really looking forward to that. So I think the thing I want to do most here is I want to talk about the experience. I've written about the Atlanta Film Festival this year and how it was a little weird in terms of my structure. I mean, not really. I mean, I dealt with this year, I actually with there was only one screening and it was midweek that I missed because of work, but it was a screening that's like if I don't make it, I don't make it. All the red carpets that I wanted to do, I did. All of the weekend stuff that I do wanted to do, I did. And it was in that respect, it was really good. The only thing really impacting me on the 2 weekends was we were season ticket holders for the Atlanta Vibe professional volleyball team this year. And so I had the Saturday of the festival, the first Saturday of the festival and the last day of the festival that I had tickets to go to the last two games of the year, last two home games of the year. And so I didn't get to as many screenings those days as I would have normally done. But it is what it is, and it impacted what I was going to be able to get to. But it also kind of made some level of sense in terms of what I was prioritizing, I guess, this festival. And this festival was a different one. This was a slightly different one because of the fact that overall, I would say it was a good festival. I don't know that I would say it was a great film festival. I think there were some really strong movies. The movies I really liked really had an impact on me. Those felt fewer and further between this year. And even some of the films that I really liked, I was like, okay, I get it. It's fine. It's really good. It does last with me, but how much do I really think it'll last in the long run? And that's kind of where this festival landed in terms of a lot of its features and especially a lot of the documentaries. Like this year, there was really only a couple of documentaries that really stood out. A couple of them were watched after the festival. Ones that I would have otherwise liked to have seen during the festival, but because of my commitments with the Vibe, I was unable to. And then the rest of the ones during, they were fine. They were okay, but they didn't really have much lasting impact on me. But this is where we talk about kind of what stood out to me. And as far as features, there were actually quite a few. Some of the ones that really stood out to me and really have continued to make a lasting impact on my memory were a movie To a Land Unknown, which was one of the Friday night, first Friday night entries, Lockjaw, The World Drops Dead, and Dandelions, which is a fascinating documentary that ended up being my last viewing of the festival. I watched it via screener. I watched it via screener. And then there was also Friendship, which was a really wonderful dark comedy with Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd. See, documentaries, there really was not a whole lot. Third Act, Tadashi Nakamura's film, which I wrote about on Sonic Cinema, and really had an unexpected emotional impact to, and was able to talk to Tadashi afterwards, and that was wonderful to be able to talk to him about it, and didn't do that as an official interview, just wanted to tell him how much the movie meant to me and how much I really liked it. Narita, about the Argentinian activist, and then Dandelions, which was fascinating because of the fact that it looked at the way one man's family changes dramatically compared to what he originally thought. And that one was the last one I'd seen and I thought was really striking. And then there was the short documentary Sunset and the Mockingbird, which was about a jazz pianist who has Alzheimer's, and but the music is not touched by it, and that was really fascinating. And it reminded me a lot of my mom and how her even as her memory when she was still singing, she could still sing, kind of sing along, or at least voice along with the songs that she loved. And then, but easily my favorite, one of my favorite documentaries was an experimental one called Eponymous. And it looked at Caroline Rumley, the director's in-laws, and their fascinating life and what it means to have, how it's connected and how the family dynamics work. And it was just really rich in how it moves back and forth in time, goes back and forth between specific ideas, and it was fantastic. Narrative films, I mean, other than To a Land Unknown, which I already talked about, Friendship, The World Drops Dead, the ones, there weren't a whole lot that was like, oh yeah, this is something that's going to stick with me. Actually, two of the ones that were definitely going to stick with me were genre films that I saw the last weekend, one of which was It Ends on Friday Night, which is a psychological thriller about four friends who are on a road trip and find themselves continually driving with no end in sight. We Bury the Dead with Daisy Ridley, which was specially screened at the festival It's not coming out until later this year, and I very much hope people check it out because it is a fascinating horror thriller. If you're a fan of 28 Years Later, which just came out, this is going to have a lot of connective tissue with that one, just without the excessive amount of zombie dong and without the general aesthetic of the 28 blank later movies. It's fascinating. It is another terrific performance by Daisy Ridley, and it was really worth watching. I'm glad I had a chance to see it very early. Short films, I will admit there weren't a whole lot of short films that really stood out this year. One of the ones that we had red carpet for, though, was a film from Christian Nolan Jones called Red Clay. And it is set in 2000s Atlanta as a young black man struggles to define a future for himself and out of addiction, his mother's addiction. And the writers of the film were Omar Epps and 2 Chainz, and they happen to be there. And I was pleased to be able to talk briefly with both of them. And I'm gonna go just right into 2 Chainz just because of the fact that I was only after Omar Epps, just because of the fact that I was only able to get one question with 2 Chainz, but it was one that I wanted to ask, and he gave a really thoughtful answer for. So this is Omar Epps and 2 Chainz, the writers of Red Clay.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. What was it about this particular story that inspired you to write this screenplay for it?
It was just it wasn't one particular thing. I think overall it was, it's based on true events, and it's just a story that spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a life that happened, right? I think everyone has a story, no matter where you come from, and it's interesting to unearth a person's origins when you've kind of seen the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always pleasantly surprised as I meet people throughout my travels about where people come from and why they are the way that they are and
mm-hmm.
what things they went through that help influence their development. So, that's kind of what inspired me.
What was it about the particular collaborations with 2 Chainz on the screenplay?
Yeah.
And just telling the story in general, what made that a good fit for you?
Well, it wasn't about a fit. It just happened naturally. I don't think it was something either one of us thought about. It just, as family, and we would be having these conversations and sitting around like, man, this, it's like a movie, that's how every conversation ended off. And then one day I was just inspired to what would something like this look like on paper?
Mm-hmm.
and sent it to him, and we just kept vibing, and then here we are.
What was making a short film when you guys were going into the writing process? How much of a challenge was it to keep it as certain length for a particular short film, or making it a longer feature?
That's a good question. For me, I don't ever think about the format. I just let the story dictate that, and I think you at least my approach, you do what you do, and then when you take a step back from it, like as you're taking it more seriously and it's coming
mm-hmm.
together and there's other heads involved, then you sort of have to, shave off the edges, so to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it still has to be a story. And but that part of it wasn't hard at all because we sort of were setting out to do a short.
Mm-hmm.
But, with shorts, it's interesting. I mean, it could be 5 minutes, it could be half hour. It doesn't really, you know what I mean? So with those parameters, there's a lot of real estate to tell a story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular from this movie that you'd like audiences to be thinking about afterwards?
Yeah, empathy. Mm-hmm. You know, have empathy for one another. You never know what someone's coming from. It doesn't justify their choices of the now, but
right.
at least, you know, think about that. Like, someone may have come from this sort of circumstance, and that's informing their choices. So I think when we lead with a little empathy, that gives that space for grace, understanding, and we grow from that.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank nice you, to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Hello. When you come up with a story that you want to tell, was there a big difference in coming up in wanting to tell this story cinematically as opposed to musically?
It's a huge difference, man. In music, you're trying to rhyme words. You're trying to do it in a small period of time. And you have a time frame when you're trying to articulate a story on film, too. But it's a little bit more strenuous, a little bit more detailed. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit more time.
Yeah.
One of my favorite films of the festival was actually the first in-person screening, and that was for David Fortune's Color Book. It is Ilam-based, and it follows a father trying to raise his son with Down syndrome after the death of his wife. And it is basically following them on a couple of days where he's trying to be a good father. He's trying to get things straightened out, but they just don't necessarily work out. And it was just a beautiful... It was honestly just a beautiful film to watch. And... there were quite a few people from the production on the red carpet and had a chance to talk to some of them. And we're going to start with the director, David Fortune.
Yes, for sure.
So what was the inspiration behind this film?
Yes, so the inspiration behind Color Book was I just wanted to tell an intimate story of a black father raising his son. But it wasn't until I started speaking to parents who was raising children who have Down syndrome where I felt like, you know what, these two worlds of a black father raising his son versus, or not versus, but with, you know, the Down syndrome community, I felt like there was a space for that story to be told. And so for me, I just really wanted to tell an intimate connection of a black father and son who has Down syndrome.
Okay, excellent. What were... You seem to make a deliberate choice in shooting in black and white.
Yes.
What inspired you to make that choice?
No, that's a great question because it wasn't based in style, it was based in story.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with black and white, it quiets the focus and allows the audience to connect with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want this to be a character-based narrative where you're not focused on the world around them, but the intimacy and the relationship that's between them. And so black and white just helps accentuate that.
Okay. Were there any particular films you were inspired by when it came to making the film? Whether it was from a writing perspective or whether it was from a filmmaking perspective?
Yeah, so actually I was inspired by photojournalism.
Okay.
You know, I studied the works of Gordon Parks, Carrie Mae Weems, Saul Leiter, Chester Higgins, and I relied on their visuals of how they capture black life in the South, and I wanted to bring that same visual essence but through cinema. So okay. I actually leaned into photojournalism. From an editorial perspective, I studied the works of Ozu and understood like how he paced his stories and mm-hmm. how he grounded his narratives in family.
Right.
And so even the idea of the pillow shot, where you just don't cut to the next scene, but you settle on an item,
mm-hmm.
and that item is the bridge, the emotional bridge between one scene to the next. So I really studied a lot of his work and just kind of implemented that to Color Book.
Okay, excellent. What is one of the most important things you would like for audiences to get out of the film?
The most important thing, or one of the more important things I would love for the audience to get out of the film is just to connect and spend time with the characters. You know, I didn't want to make a big social political statement with this film. I just wanted to make a human one.
Right.
Where you just connect with them, you see them, you embrace them, and you see yourself through their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I really want the audience to do, is just to see these characters and spend time with two people that you normally wouldn't have.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear from executive producer Xavier Tu Lewis.
How did you first get involved in telling this story?
Me and my wife, Naturi Naughton Lewis, we started our production company, Take Two Entertainment. We were looking for new, great projects that was like diverse and really creative storytelling. Korsten Vandiver, who's also an executive producer on this project, sent us the project, and I read it in one day. I said, it was amazing, I'm on. Whatever you need me to do to finance it, let's do it, and let's get it done. And that's what we did. So,
okay, excellent. Were there any particular challenges you came about in when it comes to financing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the particular challenges for us was just understanding the dynamics of, like, what happens after we go through the film festivals, and what does that happen, you know? Because we're a new production company, and my wife, she's an actress, so we've usually been on that side. I'm an actor, manager, I manage all kind of entrepreneurs and different things like that. So on this side, on the production side, we was like, you know, how do you get your returns and things like that? But the project was so beautiful that we was like, it doesn't even matter. We just want to make sure the world gets to see it. So it was so important that we was able to just finance it and just let it come to the world.
Has there been anything particularly surprising as you've rolled out the film to audiences?
I think for me, the surprising thing is the reaction. I think how many people have things in common, because we don't get to talk about this a lot. And so a lot of people have a lot in common, family members who dealt with this and things like that. So the reaction has been, like, very well and very warm. And you know, like, from every festival we've been in, we've won awards, tons of awards, over, like, 20 awards so far. And so it's been good, a receptive response to the film community. It's just a love letter, you know?
Okay, excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it.
Oh, man, I can't wait till you see it. Thank you so much. And what's your name?
Brian.
Brian,
nice to meet you.
Great to meet you. What should I do with my hand?
Next, we're going to hear from Najima Williams. He played Meech in the film.
Sorry, what's your name?
Najima Williams.
Okay.
I played Meech in the film.
All right.
Yeah.
How did you first get hold of this script?
Erica Arvo, the casting director, she shot it to me, and then I think Jordan Blair Brown first, and then Erica Arvo, and I actually initially read for Lucky, and that's all I wanted to do, but then when they cast Will, I was gonna pass, but then they came back and asked me to come play Meech, and I really liked Meech's character. He embodied, like, that Atlanta feel, so I came on back.
What was it about this script that inspired you to want to be in it?
Well, it was just a beautiful portrait of fatherhood. And, you know, a lot of times we don't see images of black fatherhood portrayed in a positive light. And this was such a beautiful love story to that moment. Just the support that he had. It was melancholy, but it was still uplifting at the end when they finally made it through, and they felt like they were going to make it through, even with, the last minute breakfast and everything. I just really enjoyed the script.
So you said you auditioned for one role but ended up in another.
Yeah.
What was that mindset like when you ended up going to the role that you ended up playing compared to the original one?
Well, you know, as an actor, you know, you want to do work that you're inspired by.
Right.
And I was really inspired by the whole movie. And that's rare. Sometimes you get sides, you don't get the full script. I read the full script, I read the movie, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then after I didn't get the lead, I was like, man, you know what? I don't want to do this. But then I read it and I was like, you know what, this is important. The movie is important. This work is important. And the role that I wound up getting fit me perfectly like a glove, I feel.
Okay. So, yeah. All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to watching it tonight.
I'm excited for you to see it. I'm really excited for you to see it. What's your name again?
Brian.
Pleasure to meet you, Brian.
Nice to meet you as well.
WAG.
Sonic Cinema. Sonic Cinema.
I'm excited for you to see it.
And that brings us to my final interview of the festival. And it is the one that I basically said we will be continuing throughout in another episode of the Sonic Cinema Film Festival. This was a wonderful filmmaker to get to know, to get to talk about when it comes to art, when it comes to their art, when it comes to their narrative choices. The filmmaker is Kiara Faber, and her partner and collaborator was there as well, and so you will hear them on the interview as well. And we had it at a restaurant and before screening. It was such a wonderful experience. And I can't wait to have them back on the podcast and to talk to them more. It was just such a wonderful discussion. And I hope you enjoy it.
So I think the first thing I want to ask you is, what is it about animation that inspired you to go in that direction as a filmmaker?
That's a really great question. I think that I really love creating new worlds and then envisioning, vignettes and scenes that take place in that. And I think I grew up as a fine artist, so making drawings and paintings. Okay, thanks. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
It's good, eh? Yeah. So I'm used to, creating, working with my hands and doing physical things in terms of like drawing and painting, and so it kind of was a natural extension for me to be able to envision and then make that whole world physically happen. Okay. And then I really love creating characters as well, and like letting my imagination take me to where I want to make these kind of like hybrid characters. And so, and I also just love the ability to tell an abstract story that animation can lend itself to. I love that.
Two of those?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Who are some of the filmmakers you're most inspired by? Is it primarily animators, or are there live action filmmakers that have inspired you over the years as well?
For animation, obviously the Brothers Quay would be a classic in terms of envisioning and creating a whole world and that level of tactility to their films and the surrealness in their work. Same with Jan Svathmeyer. I really am drawn to the surrealism of his work. Some contemporary animators would be Sofia Carrillo is a great stop motion animator from Mexico, and Stacey Steers is a really, she's more two dimensional. But again, kind of like an abstract, a non-narrative kind of way of telling stories through animation. In terms of, I'm probably more drawn to experimental, they use humans in films. And so, thank you so much. Sally Porter, I really like the films of Sally Porter. In terms of, I can't think of anyone that sticks up. I'm not drawn to traditional narrative storytelling.
Right.
I'm much more kind of experimental and kind of infusing that into animation. But definitely I'm not traditional, I'm not a Disney animator type of person. That does not inspire me or kind of get me excited in that genre. Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that was so taken by the film from a visual standpoint is it does seem like you do a lot of mixing up the animation styles within the film. What I mean, other than the experimental nature of it, what was it about this particular story that led to that? Or would you say that's more of a personal signature that you try to do?
That's a great question. I think it's probably a personal signature. I think that because I really like to draw, I really love bringing that element into the films. The puppets, the amateur puppets, I like designing them so that kind of brings that element into it. And I really love a fully sentient world, so when the scenery kind of animated as well, it became like, you know, alive and interacting with the characters, so like the whole place is kind of vibrating with life. And so I think that's why I wanted to bring the different types of animation styles. And so I think I just kind of think of that way, like everything is living and should move and interact with one another in kind of these interesting ways. So I think is that kind of what you're picking up on?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And based on the description in Letterboxd, is this part of a series that you've done? In the middle of?
A theoretical series.
Okay, got it.
So I made the first film, Obscura, which combines some live action with stop motion. Mm-hmm. And it had a similar kind of underlying theme would be kind of this transitional space. So Obscure had that kind of middle space where, through pixelation, where the human character met the amateur puppets, which were like life-size puppets, so they could interact in like a plausible space. Mm-hmm. That was a kind of intermediary space. In Garden City's Fire, the kind of intermediary space is kind of the background, because the 16mm that's rear projected is advanced frame by frame with the animations in the foreground. So that kind of space of like it existing, you know, that 16mm was shot in the real human world of nature and different scenes of that. And so it's kind of merging our world with the animated world, kind of this implausibility and like these characters just kind of be amongst us. So it's kind of the kind of narrative thread that comes together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so okay, I have
some silverware. Sure. Definitely.
So I have the inklings for a third.
Okay.
But I have not. I just have like tons of notes, but not. And it's not kind of. I've not begun the pure pre-production yet.
Yeah. What is one of the things that you want audiences to take out of your work the most?
I would hope that they kind of let themselves, like, I'm not really telling anyone what to think or feel.
Right.
And so I really hope that people can kind of look at and then make the films them feel or think about something in a different way or see something they maybe hadn't maybe paid attention to before and kind of weave their own narrative in the work. And so I think that's really exciting to me. I like art that doesn't tell me what to think. I like the art that makes me kind of bring my own thinking and my own who I am to the work. So I hope kind of like the viewer and the work kind of meet in that middle space. Almost like that transitional space where we kind of have a conversation, the work and the viewer have a conversation with one another. And maybe we glean more things about ourselves or the work and it kind of makes kind of a new story in some way.
Yeah. No, I think that...
Cheers. Thank you for making time for us.
How deep into the film festival circuit is this film right now?
It premiered in October 2024.
Okay.
In Romania, and then it went on to Georgia, the country. And then it's been in Madison, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. My gosh, I can't even remember every place it's been yet. But it's maybe like
Boston.
It's maybe, I don't know where, you know, where it is in terms of like, it's ultimately still millions of tons of festivals. So
right.
It's maybe like, and it's like, hopefully has a long way to go.
Yeah.
It's going on to Seattle in 2 weeks, which I'm really excited about. And a really interesting kind of experimental animation showcase, which is really interesting.
Okay.
And so hopefully it's maybe like in its like, you know, beginning to middle.
Okay.
The whole life.
All right. I'm good. Thank you.
And still feeling good about our choice?
Yeah, it's
yes.
great.
So, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks. So I'm curious, like, what kind of themes you picked up on? And you said you kind of like are rolling over some. I'm curious.
I mean, I think the fantastical nature of the world was one of the things that struck me the most about it. There's definitely a sense of destruction. There's definitely a sense of man versus nature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's kind of an easy one to pick up on, but at the same time, it's easy. It really is kind of, it's a very fluid theme that you can work into a number of different ideas.
I'm happy to hear that, because, you know, oddly, a lot of people don't pick up on that. So I'm happy.
Really?
Yes. So when you say it's like a natural thing to perceive, a lot of people have not mentioned that. So it's very interesting to hear. So I'm pleased to hear you say that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
No, and I love that. I love the tactile nature of the animation, especially the character animation. It's just really wonderful. I do always try to see the animation short film blogs.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see the different ways that people work with animation and
right.
many different mediums and styles.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, no two stop motion films are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
It just basically turned out my schedule tomorrow just doesn't really agree with getting the 2:30 show there. But
Well, I'm so happy you took the time to watch it. Thank you so much.
Honestly, I was going to check out the MH short film blog, you know, next week if they do the virtual
festival. Yeah. I'm happy they
so
do that.
So I was definitely going to... They always show the short film blog, so
yeah,
I was definitely going to make a point of it there.
Yeah,
but no, because of the fact that I knew you were going to be in town, it just makes it all the more imperative for me to get to it now so we can talk about
it
while
really,
you're here.
It's really fun to be able to talk about it.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. Thank you very much for your patience once again as I basically try to figure things out in terms of getting the podcast back on track. And also, thank you for listening. This episode was later than I'd hoped, but at the same time, I'm glad that it's out there now. And I'm glad to be able to share all of these discussions with you. Coming up, we're going to continue with our Fascism in Cinema series. We're going to get some anniversary screenings or anniversary episodes in with some fascinating topics. And we're also going to see a return of Star Wars to the podcast. I know. Through a filmmaker whom I've gotten to know over the past few years, and I'm really excited to have them join me on the podcast. And that's going to be it. Once again, thank you very much for however you listen to the podcast. Click subscribe, rate, and review. Check out the Patreon. And also, thank you as always for checking us out at www.sonic-cinema.com. Thank you.